Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is in partnership with Gloss Genius. Made for salons and spas, Gloss Genius is the only business management and payments platform that makes it easy to grow revenue and enhance the client experience, which we are all about here on The Treatment Room. From a beautiful online booking site to powerful marketing tools and low payment processing rates, Gloss Genius empowers you to run your full salon or spa in a stylish and smart way while feeling supported at every step. For 50% off for 2 months, go to glossgenius.com/signup and enter code TTRSPRING or check the show notes for details. Now let's get back to the show. Hello guys, welcome back to The Treatment Room with me, your host, Tessa Zolli. I am here with Michelle Phelan of Concepts Institute. She is the founder and educator behind Concepts. She has been practicing for over 30 years, and she has taught aesthetics at every level, including state board, clinical, medical, and Sedesco. Michelle writes the core curriculum and teaches clinical aesthetics at Concepts Institute's highly advanced program. She is a Sedesco diplomat and registered aromatherapist, one of the very few here registered in the U.S. I feel so fortunate to know Michelle. I met her kind of midway through my aesthetics school experience, and I am just so grateful to know her. I think anybody who's taken a class with her or who has worked with Michelle in really any capacity knows she is just so nurturing, so kind, and so informed. So Michelle, I think of you as like my esthetician fairy godmother, and I'm just so happy to know you. So thank you for joining us on The Treatment Room, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Tess, for that awesome introduction. Wow, that was amazing. So happy to be back here with you and with everyone. I love to be a part of your podcast because you have so many wonderful guest speakers, and then you yourself just offer so much to your followers that it's amazing. And I think it is something that is so needed and wanted in the industry. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. Yes, absolutely. I think education is, I mean, we can never have enough of it as estheticians. And speaking of, you know, education, the topic of today's show, on a slightly more serious note, is autoimmune disorders and how they affect the skin. And Michelle and I actually both have our own autoimmune illnesses.
We do.
Related to thyroid. So we are not just talking the talk. We have walked this walk
for a long time.
Yeah. And it is, you know, a topic that is so, so prevalent. Autoimmune diseases actually affect more than 23.5 million Americans. But within aesthetics, I feel like autoimmune conditions and skin is just, you know, something that's not covered as much. And it definitely deeply affects our clients, and not just physically. I mean, it affects parts of their body, but of course it affects their skin, and it can affect their mental state. So with this episode, we wanted to touch on some of these conditions that can affect the skin and also just bring awareness to them. And small little disclaimer, of course, we don't want to diagnose, we don't want to give medical advice to our clients in regards to these conditions. We don't want to go against their doctor's recommendations. We want to support their doctors, and we want to support our clients as much as possible.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad that we have our list here today that we're going to cover. And I know there are other autoimmune disorders too out there that we won't have time to talk about today, but it's great that we can focus on the ones that I know that really do affect and bother my clients and that I've dealt with, you know, and worked with, had the great opportunity to work with for over 30 years. So I'm really happy to get started on, you know, all of these different disorders that we can talk about today.
Yes, such an important topic. So, Michelle, from a very baseline level, would you mind explaining what autoimmune diseases are and which ones might affect the skin?
Yeah, absolutely. So an autoimmune disorder in general is where the immune system, your immune system, doesn't actually recognize itself as self, right? And so the immune system in general, of course, when you have a pathogen, right, or a virus, a bacteria, any type of pathogen that enters into the system, you have your first line of defense, which are your macrophages, of course, part of the immune system, one of the white blood cells. And you have the rest of the team, T cells, and of course, backup B cells that are part of immunity that help to fight disease. The problem with autoimmune disease and disorders is when the immune system doesn't follow, you know, the natural approach to doing that, and instead attacks some of its own cells and causes inflammation and degradation and breakdown within the cells. So that sort of in a nutshell is what autoimmune disease or disorder is. And of course, then there are many different types and different conditions depending upon, you know, where this is happening. You know, if it is happening in the skin, it could be skin lupus. There are also other types of reactions in the skin like psoriasis, the scleroderma. Rosacea is a little bit debatable. I know some of the doctors that I work with consider rosacea potentially an autoimmune disorder, and then some of them don't. So we could talk a little bit more about rosacea in a little while. And I know, Tess, too, you wanted to talk a little bit about vitiligo, which I know a lot of the doctors consider vitiligo and will put vitiligo in the category of autoimmune. So where would you like to start? On which?
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. Those are such great ones to mention. Of course, not all of them, but we did want to touch on some of the most prevalent and, you know, obvious conditions that can affect the skin. So why don't we start with psoriasis, Michelle? What could you tell us about this condition? How does it present on the skin? What are maybe things to be aware of? And how could estheticians treat psoriasis?
Yeah, so psoriasis, and then there are different types of psoriasis. The most common type of psoriasis that we as estheticians probably recognize is when lesions appear on the flexor areas, like the elbows or the knees or even other parts of the body, where the skin becomes like really, really thick, kind of like a lichenification, very thick, peely, red, and itchy. And so that is sort of the, best known characteristic and the best way to sort of describe it. A lot of, I know, even my clients and the doctor's patients that I work with will have it on the backs of their elbows, on the knees. The cause of this, if you talk to the physicians and the dermatologists, a lot of times they'll say the, potential for this runs in families. Some of the physicians that I talk to and work with will say, well, maybe the client or the patient has had a lot of damage in that area or previous injury to that area. Again, it is a little bit idiopathic, meaning that they don't know 100% what the pathology is, but they do know what it looks like. So again, very thick, dry, often itchy. And what's happening inside, you know, what is happening internally within the tissue itself is that the immune system there is attacking the tissue in the area so that the tissue in kind of defense of itself starts to become really thick to protect itself, you know, very thick and kind of hardens a little bit, which is the lichenification. So I know there are medications, you know, when it's very severe that the dermatologists and that the doctors will give their patients. But as far as just being in the spa or in the clinic, like what can you do for your client? There are things that we can do as far as exfoliation, but you don't want to use any, you know, you don't want to use a very strong acid because that can actually exacerbate the condition and make the condition worse. Because if you're turning over cells very rapidly, the body will feel that there's more injury in the area. So again, if there's more injury in the area, it's a vicious cycle. The immune system will attack that area of skin. And what happens? Yes, the skin does become thicker and, you know, harder and more uncomfortable than before. So what I usually do, at least for my own clients and the doctor's patients, is I have them at home use serums and moisturizers that are not super, super active. Meaning, you know, no AHAs and no BHAs, unless the AHAs and BHAs are at the bottom of the index, you know, very, very low in percentage. And the same thing with essential oils, just because we don't know how the skin will react. But a really good ingredient to look for is, are ceramides. I mean, ceramides help to protect the barrier. They help to lubricate. They help in certain ways to restore the acid mantle. Another really great ingredient to look for is squalane. Now, squalane is from the eye of the olive. It is very similar to the natural oils in your skin. It helps to lubricate. It helps to soften. And then also looking for ingredients that are anti-inflammatory in nature. That would be ingredients, unless of course your client is allergic, that would be ingredients like aloe vera, beta-glucan, calendula, watercress. I know a lot of people ask about calming and soothing essential oils. If your client doesn't have a reaction to essential oils at all, a little bit of chamomile at the, you know, listed at the bottom of the index would not be a bad thing. And then of course, exfoliation with enzymes, very gentle enzymes like bromelain from pineapple or, you know, papain from papaya would actually be fairly good for the skin. It would help to break down some of those corneocyte cohesions, release that tissue, soften the skin without turning over the skin like massively, like with a really strong, you know, alpha hydroxy or beta hydroxy might be a little bit too much. But like I mentioned before, if in the product it is very low as far as percentage, that could actually be helpful as well.
Michelle, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So given that psoriasis could present on the face and the body, is it common to see it on both? And would the professional want to tweak their exfoliation, you know, according to the face a little bit differently if the psoriasis presents on the body, if that makes sense? In other words, should they exfoliate a little bit more, maybe on the skin on the body, since that skin might be a little bit thicker and tougher? What do you think?
Yes. And from my experience too, on the flexors, you know, and of course on the elbows and the knees, what both take a lot of abuse anyhow. And that's probably one of the reasons that the psoriasis appears there and expresses there, because we, you know, kneeling or just kind of leaning on our elbows, you know, that can cause more trauma to the area. So definitely the body skin can take a little bit more than the facial skin. It's a little bit more rare to have psoriasis on the facial area. It's more common to have dermatitis, some type of contact dermatitis from, you know, an allergen, or even maybe seborrheic dermatitis, which is often an imbalance of the pH of the skin. And sometimes in some cases, it can also, seborrheic dermatitis may have a yeast component. But absolutely, Tess, to your point, if a client did have psoriasis on the face, you do need to be a lot more careful. The, you know, exfoliation should be a lot less. Everything should be a lot less, not as much friction. Because what I've found at least with my own clients who have psoriasis on the face or facial area rather, when you stimulate that area too much, it can spread a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, it could become a little bit worse. And in those cases, I, you know, do refer to the physician so that they can have that diagnosed, right, analyzed correctly, and then placed on the appropriate pharmaceutical.
Okay. And I feel like that brings up a good question before we get into some of the other conditions. Michelle, what is the appropriate way an esthetician can bring up a conversation about these conditions without diagnosing? And, you know, in a way that doesn't scare or startle the client, you know, especially mm-hmm. if we as the esthetician, we're not sure what this right. condition is. What's the appropriate way to even have that conversation with the client, but also, you know, give them the encouragement if needed to seek medical care?
And exactly. And that's a really, really good question, because you might see something on the skin and you might think, oh, I think it's this, but you really, you know, you can't say anything. Even when right. we refer it over to the dermatologist, sometimes they'll take a look at it and say, let's do a little scrape biopsy and send it off to pathology just to be on the sure side, you know, the absolute be certain about this. So yeah, that's a really good question, Tess. What I normally tell them is, you know, to me, and what it looks like to me is just from my experience. But what I really would like to do with you, you know, you'll tell the client, is to refer you to a dermatologist or have you go back and see your derm just to be sure, just to make certain that it is psoriasis and that it's not anything else, especially anything else that could potentially be worse, because so many skin lesions can look so similar. And I've seen this a lot in the physicians' offices where they think, this could look like this, or it could be this, or it could be that, right? And they don't know. So they have to do a little biopsy and send it to pathology so that they can look at it under the microscope, right? The pathologist can, and then come back with an exact diagnosis. So I'll tell them often, you know, if it's really minor and it's not something that's very serious, it doesn't bother them, it's been there a while, you could probably safely do a very simple facial. But if it is something that is getting a little bit larger, I tell them, you know, just to be on the safe side, just to kind of check it out. This is normal. This is what I do, even for my own skin, is to go ahead and see your dermatologist. And let them, you know, define this, let them diagnose this for you. And, you know, in most cases, it's not a big deal. But I've had, and I know this is kind of off topic, but I have had my own clients where you look at their skin and think it looks like a simple, you know, mole. And you're just not sure. So you refer them to the dermatologist. They do a little biopsy and it ended up being melanoma. So yeah, and that's just so rare though, Tess. It's not, you know, but it's always better to be safe than sorry.
Of course.
And I know psoriasis and melanoma, the characteristics of each are completely different, you know, to each other. So we don't really have to worry too much about that. But still, you know, if I look at something and I just really, I can't say this is a blackhead or, you know, white head or a pustule or sebaceous cyst, if it looks suspect or just unknown, I feel good to have, you know, the doc check it out.
And I feel like that's even a good way to phrase it. You know, I'm seeing something here. I can't be sure and I can't diagnose, but it's always better to be safe than sorry. And in that case, I think we should, you know, investigate further because it looks a little bit unfamiliar.
A little bit suspect.
So in that way, we're not diagnosing, we're not, you know, calling out exactly what it is, but just saying it's something worth your client investigating. And I think that also communicates you care and you're aware and you're noticing.
Right. And you're staying within your scope of practice. You know, you're being as safe as possible. The client knows that you really do care about their skin and that you know when it goes out of your scope of practice that it does go over to medical, that it needs to be checked out. I mean, I know when you look at the elbows or the knees and you see the typical psoriasis, or maybe the client or patient has told you, you know, I'm being treated for psoriasis, or this is really, you know, minor, the doctor's aware of it, and we're not really doing anything right now, but we're keeping an eye on it. So you already have that understanding of what the, you know, what it is. And then in that case, you know, really simple, gentle facials, hydrating, protective, antioxidant ingredients are usually pretty safe to use on and over the skin.
So let's move on, Michelle, to the next condition on our list, which is scleroderma, something we talked about a little bit offline. And, you know, it may not be something everybody encounters in their practice, but it does affect 300,000 Americans. So, you know, it is something that is out there and ongoing. Michelle, how does scleroderma present on the skin? And what are some things to be aware of when treating somebody with that condition?
Yeah, so scleroderma presents on the skin is not just a dryness, but a tightening of the skin. So the skin, it could affect the facial area. You know, it could affect anywhere on the body or around the body and even internal organs. You know, where the collagen and elastin fibers are becoming very brittle and overgrowing to some degree. So this is something that if you see on your client or, you know, they're complaining about these symptoms, you definitely want to refer to the doctor right away so that they can test it, diagnose it, and then hopefully treat it. But it can be fairly dangerous. I have one client of mine in all of the 35 years that I've been practicing, just one client that presented with scleroderma, was diagnosed with scleroderma by by her physician. And it also can progressively get worse. But definitely the skin becomes very dry. The skin looks to be very, very tight, you know, throughout the area that it affects, whether it's the face or the hands or wherever. Really basic, simple facial treatments, nothing overly stimulating, nothing that will stimulate collagen elastin. That's not what you want to do. So things like, of course, you know, microneedling, microcurrent, RF, all of those anti-aging modalities that we would normally use, you don't want to use those for someone who has scleroderma. So if your client comes to you and they know they've been diagnosed with scleroderma, these are things just to keep in mind, like very simple, basic facials, hydration, protection, you know, basic massage. But again, no aggressive, not a non-aggressive approach and modalities that are not stimulating. Things like the high frequency, you know, the Tesla for little breakouts would be fine. But deeper modalities would not be a good idea for a client who has, you know, has been diagnosed with scleroderma.
Okay, so good to know. And I feel like this brings up a really good point, Michelle, which is about the particular immune system in individuals with autoimmune conditions and how overstimulating just really isn't, you know, what we want to do in the treatment room, because typically people like Michelle and myself have these immune systems that are already in overdrive. So when we're treating with these really aggressive things, it can almost be counterproductive, right, Michelle?
Exactly. You know, so you're like you said it, Tess, your system is in overdrive, at least in that particular area. So like with ours, I know with mine, it's hyperthyroidism, mm-hmm. which my form is Graves' disease, but it's hyperthyroidism. So the thyroid is producing too much thyroxine, which then affects other things like heart rate beating too quickly, hand tremors, you know, weight loss of weight once in a while, or even loss of hair. So it affects different parts of the body. And of course, if we have it under control, but Tess and I, we both know that controlling mm-hmm. that thyroid once it is malfunctioning mm-hmm. is a hard thing to do. Yes. But when we do have it under control, it is a lot better. But even that, even thyroid can affect the skin. You know, if you yes. have hyperthyroidism, you may have sweaty skin, right? The skin may be a little bit more oily because everything becomes more hyperactive. But mm-hmm. in your case, a test where you have underactive, then the skin might become drier. Yes. Right? It might become more sluggish. It might become more inflamed.
Yes. Yes. And sluggish skin could result in more breakouts if that cell turnover is slowed down. Dry skin could even result in breakouts or just sensitivity. So it's something to be aware of. And, you know, even on the eyebrows, this is something, you know, estheticians can wax. And you might notice you have a client who's missing the tail of an eyebrow. And again, that's not a circumstance to diagnose anything, but, you know, especially if it's somebody you see regularly and you recognize this is a little bit different than the last time I see them, mm-hmm. it's a topic worth bringing up. And my dermatologist has actually caught this a couple times when my thyroid has been out of whack. And, you know, she sees me quarterly for Botox, but she notices these things and it, before, you know, my primary care or specialists I see. So that's where, you know, us in skin, we should be taking good notes and just be observant of our clients.
Yes. And thyroid definitely can cause, you know, hair loss in general, whether it's overactive or underactive, and not just in your, you know, not just on your head, but also, like you mentioned, your eyebrows. And your eyelashes too. Mm-hmm. You know, I've noticed that not just because I'm older and past menopause, that menopausal phase, but even when I was younger, that when I was diagnosed with hyperthyroidism, that my eyelashes were falling out. They never really grew back to the, you know, to the fullness that they once were. But these are things to talk to the client about if you happen to see this. Or maybe they don't recognize it, or maybe they were diagnosed with one of these disorders. It's good to have this information and to also have this in their chart.
Absolutely, Michelle. Yes. And something I also just thought of is the fact that our clients may be taking medications, Michelle and myself included, we take a thyroid medication and it can make us excessively thirsty. So just mm-hmm. having that mindfulness for everyone, but, you know, also understanding people with conditions specifically who are taking medication, when they come into your spa and they come in to see you, always offer them the bathroom, always offer water if you can, with, I know the COVID policies have changed things a little bit, but just having that awareness for their well-being and their needs, I think is what can take an esthetician from being, you know, really good to being like excellent and, you know, offering those things before your client has to kind of sit with it, maybe be uncomfortable, and just offering those basic human needs.
Right. And so they don't have to, of course, if they need to, they can, but so that they don't have to get up and disrupt themselves, right, during their treatment. Also, bottled water is fine, like it's just sealed bottled water, so that they are consuming enough water every day. Of course, hydration is good for everybody, you know, whether you have a thyroid condition or an autoimmune disorder or condition or not. It's just really good to hydrate both internally and externally. So yeah, that definitely goes at the top of our list, right, Tess, for hydration, even hydration with an electrolyte to help balance the different, you know, systems of the body. I know, a little bit off topic, and maybe too much information, but I know when I had my colonoscopy, you know, being over 50, that's what we have, you know, they make you drink a lot of water, but then of course you lose a lot of water during the procedure. And I didn't think that after the procedure, I did consume water, but being half out of it from my anesthesia, didn't remember to take the electrolytes. And so for the next 2 or 3 days, I just felt like I didn't have a brain in my head. And then I remembered, wait a second, electrolytes. If you're dehydrated, you need electrolytes. So what I did was I just went down and grabbed a, you know, I think I grabbed Pedialyte. That's all I had. Mm-hmm. But it just, it snapped me back into normalcy within like 5 minutes.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's worth understanding and knowing, and hydration is important for everyone. So
yeah, for everyone, whether you're really dehydrated from some type of a medication or procedure, or just in general, if you ever feel thirsty, you've gone beyond dehydration. So we should never actually feel thirsty, because if you do, you're on your way to dehydration.
Yes. And we want to keep our clients hydrated, even for the benefit of their treatments, aside from just general wellness. But extractions will come out easier. Their skin will respond better to treatment. So yeah, that's a great one to bring up.
Exactly. Michelle. The skin will respond better. And you're right. The extractions will be made easier. Products will be applied easier in most cases, unless there are other issues going on. But absolutely, you can't underestimate the benefit of hydration with water.
Yes, and your clients will appreciate you for it, especially heading into these hotter months.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so next on our list, sorry, Michelle, I'm really firing these at you, but
no problem.
Next on our list is skin lupus. And I've definitely had a few clients who have had lupus, and my doctors have even considered it with me and ultimately ruled it out. But it is one that can present fairly obviously on the skin. Michelle, do you want to touch on lupus how it can present with the butterfly rash?
Yeah, absolutely. And lupus is so interesting. It's like this umbrella term almost, because you can have it on the facial area and then also have it in other areas as well. But definitely it presents with sort of that butterfly redness across the face. A lot of heat is involved in it. And sometimes there are other symptoms as well. You know, there may be some pain. The patient or client may also have another autoimmune disorder, because often when you have one, it's not unusual to have others or be prone to others. Sometimes I see that, well, estheticians and people in general get skin lupus confused with rosacea. So it definitely needs to, it needs to be sent over again to the physician to, you know, have it diagnosed properly. But if your client does have skin lupus, really what you want to do in this case, for sure, you know, no stimulating active ingredients that might exacerbate it, you know, really low on fragrance, no fragrance at all, possibly. Ceramides and products would be great. You know, not a lot of stimulation or heat. Heat can exacerbate it, not just exacerbate rosacea, which we'll talk about next, but skin lupus will exacerbate that condition. Often, you know, the vascular system in the facial area, it is dilated. Those vessels are dilated. The capillaries are dilated. So there's a lot of heat there. Sometimes there's pain in that area. So in this case, you kind of want to think about less is more. But again, if you do feel it is, or potentially lupus or something that you're not familiar with or don't know, refer them to a physician. If the client comes in saying, I do have lupus, it is affecting my facial area, the treatments need to be really gentle. And I would also shy away from some of the stronger acid peels. I know some of the manufacturers will say glycolic acid being anti-inflammatory is fine. I think too, that's fine, as long as the pH is very, very gentle and the percentage is very, very low.
Yes, agreed. And I think something that also estheticians should be aware of with lupus is that it can be activated by UV light for one. So your lupus client probably already knows they have to wear very good sun protection, but
that's physical also, sunblock.
Yes. That's also where we should, of course, enforce it and have good options for those who have a lupus condition. And really just be that extra little message in their head. And I've had clients with lupus to wear good protection when they are on vacation, you know, seek shade, and of course, wear their sunscreen.
Yes. And of course, we can't, underestimate not just anti-inflammatory products, but also anti-inflammatory foods. Which is good for all of us, to reduce simple sugars, you know, all the sugars that we all love, or the simple sugars, sugarcane based foods, foods that are, you know, like white rice, white bread, cookies, candies, cakes, all of those other things. But the simple sugars can cause glycation, which can cause inflammation. And of course, inflammation can lead to issues. I don't want to say it's the cause of lupus, but it definitely doesn't make it better, and it could potentially make it worse. The same with other autoimmune disorders and, you know, pain in the body, even with aging, you know, decreasing your bad sugar intake and maybe complex carbs, fruit, vegetables, fibers, okay, but decreasing your simple carbs, your simple sugars, is really helpful as well. And eating a lot of foods, right? Rich, like plant-based foods, a plant-based diet, multicolored fruit and vegetables, chock full of antioxidants and other, you know, potentially trace elements. Organic if possible. That's always really helpful too, a plant-based diet.
Yes. And I love that you brought up the antioxidants, Michelle. And I really just wanted to reiterate topically how important that can be. With one of my lupus clients, she came to me, and I mean, this also brings up the emotional component of struggling with an autoimmune condition and how it can affect the skin. Like, her spirits were very, very low, and you know, she was using mostly over-the-counter products, had no experience with professional products. And I put her on a lot of really great high-quality antioxidants, including Is Clinical ProHeal and Glymed Plus Fulvic Elixir, which has fulvic acid, very high in antioxidants, and just an overall good basic home routine. And within a matter of months, her skin was dramatically improved. I have her transformation on my Instagram. It's way back, so maybe I can dig it out again. But yeah, a few months on those products, her skin was completely different. And it's just such a testament to the way the skin can respond to these treatments. And with that, she was like, it was like day and night, night and day. She was just so full of life, so energized, so grateful, so happy, and so confident in her skin.
It was so life-changing, like that positive life-changing.
Exactly, Michelle. So life-changing. And those are the moments, you know, we can have little ones like day to day, but you know, you definitely have those transformations that just remind you how cool it is to be able to touch people and to be able to offer that quality of product and provide a structured home care regimen is such a testament to what we can do as providers with just even topical and having conversations about the skin and general lifestyle practices.
Right. And, you know, we are the educators for, right, your skin, the skin coach for our clients. Yes. You know, they go to you, they look up to you. So it really is important to, you know, stay abreast of these different topics and on top of all of these you know, new technologies and things that come into the industry, and always stay. And I know all of your followers that listen to you on your great podcast, they're really serious, right? We're serious about helping their clients, helping their patients, which is great. But yeah, clients are, they're so appreciative, with these changes. And it like Tess said, it doesn't just make the skin look better. It just makes their whole outlook on life so much better for them. And and they have such gratitude. And I know with me, when my clients feel that way, I feel great. It's very uplifting for myself as well. It's a domino effect, a positive domino effect all the way through.
Yeah.
Antioxidants are so important, like you mentioned, applying to the skin to help battle off free radicals and stabilize the tissues, and also taking them internally too. I'm sure everyone does that with your fruit and vegetables, right? Your multicolored organic fruit and vegetables, super helpful.
And Michelle, do you want to mention, I think it might be important as we're talking about vascularity, both with lupus and rosacea, which we'll talk more about next, but I know you recommend a certain supplement for vascular conditions. Do you want to speak on that?
Yes. And this has really helped my own clients and a lot of the people that I know for decades and decades. I think even the doctors are surprised. Maybe not so much the naturopaths, right? The functional medicine doctors, maybe not so much, but the MDs are always surprised. I have a lot of my own personal clients when they have, you know, rosacea or just erythema or just couperose, you know, or they're prone to bruising or dark under eye circles, is go to the health food store and buy a supplement that contains 500 milligrams of vitamin C together with 250 milligrams of bioflavonoids. Bioflavonoids are from the rinds of citrus fruit. And that has been studied over a long period of time. And it has been known to help strengthen the capillary wall, so to prevent distension. It is an antioxidant, of course, right? It's an antihistamine, a natural antihistamine. And it's just very healing to the body overall. And I have never seen two vitamin, you know, complex like this. It helps to reduce the redness of the skin, the erythema level of the skin, so dramatically, so quickly. It's really incredible, like within about 6 weeks or so. I've even had my own clients who have stopped it for a while or forgotten about it or just kind of fallen off track. And then they're like, oh, wow, my skin is becoming red again. I need to go back and get that supplement.
Yes, I'm literally taking a mental note because my cheeks are warm as we speak and I need to get back on my vitamin C regimen.
But yeah, and that's one thing too, when you look at someone and you're wondering, you know, do they just have some couperous? Do they just have some dilated vessels? Or do they potentially have rosacea, which is the redness and the dilation of the capillaries? Well, the dilation of the capillaries in someone with rosacea is different to the dilation of the capillaries in someone who just has couperous. Because if you were able to, I know you can't, but if you were able to pull out one of those little capillaries and look at it under the microscope, you would also see a great deal of white blood cells, which will tell you there's a lot of inflammation in there. That capillary is not just dilated or injured, but there's a lot of inflammation in there. So even though rosacea is idiopathic, you know, a lot of the taking that supplement, the vitamin C and bioflavonoid supplement is very helpful. And then also, you know, eating green leafy vegetables, you know, applying products like Test had just told you about antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, so helpful. And of course, staying away from things that could be overstimulating, like, you know, too much alcohol or too much caffeine, which can make the skin a little bit more red and inflamed. I know rosacea is hard to battle. There's not a cure for it. There are treatments, and stabilizing and supporting the immune system and eating foods that are anti-inflammatory and applying products topically that are anti-inflammatory are, you know, super helpful. Reducing stress, super helpful as well.
Yes. Not to be underestimated. That is the number one thing that I see that can really drive the condition. And it's so tough these days because how are we going to eliminate stress? And so many of us are just so go, go, go. We have very busy lives and jobs and, you know, people who may depend on us or family members. So one thing I do really reiterate with all of my clients and especially rosacea clients is the mental health side of things. Mm-hmm. And even if you do have a super busy and demanding job, you know, family obligations, is taking that time out of your day if you can at least once, hopefully at least twice, kind of bookending your day and taking that time for you to work on slowing down the breath, meditating, possibly journaling, and yeah, carving out some minutes for yourself to possibly meditate or just turn a little bit more inward and separate from technology, your phone, your to-do list, those kinds of things. And yeah, taking some time for yourself.
And if I can add, absolutely, to add something to that too, is that, you know, just being stressed and the adrenal glands and the pressure that that places on the other parts of the body, right? The other tissues and the other organs of the body, not just the nervous system, but the nervous system also activates the vascular system and activates the circulatory system. So everything is, you know, it works together. It's a domino effect. So absolutely, Tess, I agree. Yeah. You know, maybe some meditation, going for massage, just for a walk, consuming your water, eating your anti-inflammatory foods, decreasing your bad sugars, right? Your simple carbs. All of these things really help, especially if you're doing them, you know, in unison with each other.
Yes. Something I would also add to rosacea is this idea of like cooling down that heat that is in the skin. And I think that's something, you know, our clients can do at home and estheticians can offer in the treatment room. So in terms of your treatments when looking at rosacea, I know Michelle is really good about this, but emphasizing those cooling treatments, nothing too extreme where, you know, they would maybe take an ice block out of the fridge on a hot day and apply that to their skin. We want to avoid those extreme swings from really hot to cold, but keeping in mind that mild nature of treatment and offering some cooling treatments, maybe cool ice globes, maybe even having a little mini fridge in your treatment room where you can keep some treatments, and even extending that to your clients at home. They could keep their treatment products, such as like a moisturizer, in the refrigerator for a little anti-inflammatory effect. And also keeping in mind that really heated activities can be too stimulating for rosacea, such as vigorous massage, or if your rosacea client is a marathon runner and they love to run every day, that's tough because it can be really stimulating on the skin. But advise them to seek shade when possible and reach for those anti-inflammatory ingredients like Michelle suggested, and keeping the emphasis on cooling the skin down post heat exposure, even something like a warm shower or just, you know, working out outside on a hot day. That can be a lot for somebody with rosacea.
Right. And the more stimulation they have in those capillaries, you know, the more they've got going on in the capillaries, of course, the more red, right? The more erythema happens within the capillary. And when you've got the immune system there and you already have inflammation going on, it definitely will exacerbate. So like Tess said, you know, you don't want to do a lot of, you know, stimulation on the skin. Pressure points, if you know how to do manual facial lymphatic drainage, that would be great, because you're not overstimulating the tissue. It's like we mentioned before in some of the other podcasts, right, Tess?
Yes.
It's more of a stretch and release massage. It really actually helps to reduce swelling, and it does help to reduce some of that redness. But no real aggressive petrissage or real aggressive tap pulpment, all of those kinds of things would be better off for skin that is thicker and more durable without rosacea or lupus of the skin.
Yes. And quick little shout out to you, Michelle, and your class on lymphatic drainage. Hopefully you're still teaching it or offering
it. Still teaching it. Yeah. Okay. Coming up again.
Oh, good. Well, it's such a great class. I took this with Michelle, I think it was 2 years ago, and you really learn so much that challenges, you know, the popular opinion of what lymphatic drainage is, because I think that term is just thrown around so much, you know, in terms of general massage, but Michelle really goes into the art and technique of lymphatic drainage, which is very specific. It's that stretch and release of the skin. It's not too much pressure. But yeah, I think that's a great one to have in your back pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. No pressure at all. Right. I mean, if the pressure is deeper or mm-hmm. harder than a feather on the face, then it's too yeah. much pressure and you're actually closing down the initial lymphatics and you're closing down the capillaries of both the lymph vessels and the vascular system. So it's yes. a really special, it shouldn't even really be called a massage. I don't think I liked mm-hmm. when you said it's a stretch and release technique because that's much more apropos. But yes, if you do and know how to do a very good, effective lymphatic drainage massage, besides helping so many other things like swelling and inflammation, it is great to help reduce the redness, the vascular lesions in the skin after that massage. You'll notice a big difference.
One thing that I may want to throw in here is this idea of the Demodex mite. That mm-hmm. is a theory.
Yes, it is. Definitely the uh-huh. Demodex mite that lives in the hair follicle. They say it's nocturnal. It comes out at night and eats the dead skin cells. Mm. If you haven't seen it, look it up. They're really creepy looking.
They are.
On Google.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll spook you. And we all have them, but people with rosacea are known to have a proliferation of these Demodex mites. And something I'll throw in for your rosacea clients is really stressing the importance of home care. I think a big question I get a lot of times is, what's the most cost-effective way to treat it? And I would say it is home care, making sure your clients are investing in their home care, like they would with any other condition. This is a condition that really presents on the skin, and you want to make sure they're on good quality home care and they're cleansing their skin morning and night. Like Michelle said, not using overly aggressive things, but still cleansing to remove that oil that is actually a food source for the mites. And I suggest in my practice avoiding products that could overly occlude the skin, such as cleansing oils or very, comedogenic topical oils, serums, mm-hmm. or moisturizers. So just being mindful, and it is a tricky line where people with rosacea already have this compromised barrier. So you want to care for that trauma and you want to definitely work on healing, but it's a little balance of not overly occluding the skin, because that's like putting a roof over the Demodex mite's head.
Exactly. And keeping it nice and safe inside, right? Away from the oxygen and anything else that might be able to, destroy it.
Exactly. Exactly. So good cleansing practices and having a healthy routine to restore the barrier, again, without overly occluding the skin, I think is important to mention.
And also, if I can say something too, just keeping, like you mentioned too, it's kind of a spin-off of that, of really keeping the acid mantle of the skin intact, right? So that oil and sweat can come out of the hair follicle onto the surface of the skin, mix with dead skin cells and both yes. good and bad bacteria, and create this sort of protective shield, right? And like you were saying, mm-hmm. the reason why you want to use products that are pH balanced to help stabilize that. Protect yeah. that barrier and stabilize and protect against outside pathogenic invasion.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. And I think that's a really good theme of this episode. Like, we're really working on calming, restoring, rebuilding, and protecting the skin, because clients with these autoimmune conditions, I'd say like especially with rosacea, that having that outer protective layer of the skin, the stratum corneum intact, is so, so important. So thank you for bringing that up, Michelle.
Yeah, that's important. And I know it is, and all of these, right, are so fickle, right? They're so unpredictable, and there's so many that sometimes it's not really a one and done, right? You can't often just throw one product on there and expect it to treat everything. Sometimes it's trying different products, but just having an understanding of the basics, right? And what causes these autoimmune flare-ups, and how to keep the skin calm and soothed and hydrated and protective. That's a really, really good beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And keep in mind, like, it really is a marathon, not a sprint. It's a lifestyle. And I think we get that as professionals, like very much so, but our clients may not. You know, I've had clients come to me saying like, I used vitamin C, like I'm using it. I don't see the difference. I don't see the point. And you just want to reiterate, it's about long-term protection from those free radicals. You're really playing the long-term game. And, you know, these are products your clients will hopefully use, good product for life. And
exactly. It's a whole lifestyle. It's supporting a healthy lifestyle, both internally and externally. I know I have clients the same thing. Well, I've used it for a week and it's not working. Or I've used it for a month and it's not working. Well, let's see what we've got after a couple of months. And, you know, if it's going the wrong direction, you know, if it's digressing and there's an issue, well, that's a different story. We need to check that out. But if it's slowly starting to improve, that's a good thing. Some people improve faster than others, but as long as we're headed in the right direction, but just know it's not a one and done. It does take some time.
Yeah, totally. And also encouraging that like it's a lifestyle, and that means you may have to make adjustments, and it can be hard, I think, to hear. And sometimes if people have never made those lifestyle accommodations and they're used to maybe like working out outside in the blazing heat all summer, like running, you know, miles and miles, it may be something they love. They may have friends who do it. And this is where, as the professional, you know, we want to be kind of like a support system and be educators and let our clients know these are things that do have a lasting impact on the skin, and kind of want to be in their corner because they may have no education about rosacea. They may not know anyone with it. And it may seem like, oh, why can my friends like go, you know, in the hot tub and you know, go to hot yoga? I don't want to feel excluded, but it can be kind of a hard reckoning, but it is important to understand like your life may look a little bit different.
And what works for one person, and I see this a lot with my clients and the patients, but what works for one person doesn't work for everybody, right? You know, you may be able to use cinnamon as an essential oil to increase circulation, where if, you know, your friend did that, they'd turn bright red and break out in a rash all over their body. So, yeah, so it's really important. Or I have a lot of people say, well, how come, you know, my sister has been in the sun all these years and she didn't develop a basal cell carcinoma, but I did. Maybe her sister is a Fitzpatrick, you know, 4 and she's a Fitzpatrick 3. That has a lot to do with it. Or maybe it was, you know, one had more sun, a little more sun than the other. Maybe something to do with genetics, that one inherited the predisposition. So skin is very, very fickle, and it takes a long time, right, to really get to be good with it as an esthetician. So it is great that, you know, that everyone is working with their clients, asking a lot of questions. That's another important thing, is be a detective. You need to be a detective with everything, with acne, with hyperpigmentation, ask a lot of questions, write down all of the answers. Is sort of the first thing that we want to do. And then of course, you know, analyze from there.
Yep. This is the last thing I'll say before we move on to vitiligo, but just a little story. I recently went to get a facial from Douglas Preston, and he's seen me for years. He's done my acne facials and extractions. And recently I've been thinking about rosacea and finally made an appointment to have it diagnosed next week, possibly. Don't know for sure yet. We'll see.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So Michelle, when I went in to see Douglas, It's a hour and a half drive to see him in Los Gatos area, but the sun was like beating down on my face, and I noticed that heat can really activate rosacea. So when I went in to see him and I was laying down, he's just looking at me and he goes, what's this redness? Like, you haven't had that before. I haven't seen that on you, you know? And it's just asking those questions that can be really powerful and gets people thinking, because oftentimes people's cheeks are flushing and they just don't think much of it, you know? And I mean, it's a pain to go make an appointment and see the derm and have that diagnosed. Like, it's kind of a bummer.
I wasn't that red an hour ago, right? And you're not thinking, well, the car was hot, the sun was blaring down on the driver's side.
Yes, exactly. It's all of those things. So yeah, just having an esthetician who is noticing, who is aware,
who asks lots of questions,
takes good notes, that can be absolutely so powerful without diagnosing again. So we're just asking questions and being aware.
Yeah, that is so important. It's not possible just to look at someone and say, okay, you know, you've got, you know, for instance, hyperpigmentation because of, I mean, hyperpigmentation, of course, the sun makes all hyperpigmentation worse, no matter what type it is, whether it's PIH, melasma, solar lentigo, epilitis. But it's you don't want to just look at the skin and say, well, you've got, you know, melasma because of the sun. Well, the sun may have been a trigger, but most of the time melasma, or sometimes they call it colasma, the original trigger is an influx of hormones. And yes, the sun makes it worse, but it's not the original trigger. Therefore, the treatment for melasma would be different than the treatment for, let's say, PIH or solar lentigo. I know I talk about that in my anti-hyperpigmentation classes, but with hyperpigmentation, like anything, right, you can't just slap one product on it, one ingredient on it, and expect for it to be a miracle cure. And we have to pass that information on to the clients for sure.
Yep. Again, just reiterating the lifestyle. And I'm so glad you brought up hyperpigmentation, Michelle, because we're going to end on vitiligo, which manifests, I should say, as hypopigmentation, not something that's, you know, very covered.
Talked
in aesthetics.
About, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it like a little bit in aesthetic school, but when we're looking at like the mainstream information and when you're on Instagram, I don't see so much information about hypopigmentation. So Michelle, could you enlighten us a little bit on vitiligo and hypopigmentation?
Yeah, definitely. So there are different types of hypopigmentation, you know, everything from albinism, which would be if an individual was diagnosed with as an albino, right, where the melanocytes throughout the entire body, not just the skin, but the eyes and the hair, are just not active, right? So that the skin is very, very fair, the eyes are very pale, and you just don't have the protection from the sun. With vitiligo, again, kind of an idiopathic disorder, a lot of the physicians and scientists believe that it could be autoimmune. Now, with the production of pigmentation, you know, we all know if we go out into the sun, the sun hits the skin, it triggers the melanogenesis process, and then, of course, we produce color. That's how it should be. But in individuals who are diagnosed with vitiligo, that may happen with the rest of the body, but in certain parts of the body, right? It might be the face, it might be the hands. In certain parts of the body, the sun is not able to trigger that melanogenesis process. In order to trigger the melanogenesis process, there is an enzyme within the melanocyte, within the melanin cell, called the tyrosinase. It needs to be activated. And when it's activated, it activates a little amino acid called tyrosine, kind of a similar name, right? But tyrosine is an amino acid. And then when tyrosine is activated, it activates something else. It's like a domino effect. It activates something called L-DOPA, and then L-DOPA binds to oxygen, and it's a long story. It creates a color. But for people who have hypopigmentation and for people who have vitiligo, that process is not working properly, right? The melanogenesis process that most of us, when we go out into the sun, happens, right? We start to get color. After a period of time, we start to see that color. And so for some reason, again, patients with vitiligo, that doesn't happen in certain parts of their skin. And sometimes that can spread a little bit. You know, if it starts in the hand area, it may spread out onto the arm. It may also continue on to other parts of the body. So even though there is not an actual cure for it right now. What we can do for our clients who have vitiligo on the facial area is be extra careful with the skin, right? Have them use sunblocks that are extra strong because that part of the skin is lacking color, right? Lacking pigmentation. And we know that pigmentation is our natural sunblock. So that's very important. And treat the skin overall like infant skin. Anti-inflammatory ingredients, antioxidants. Of course, first line of defense is a sunblock. If they don't have a reaction to physical sunblock with zinc oxide or titanium dioxide, that's always good because it helps to deflect UV light. That is very helpful. But unfortunately, there's not a cure for that at the moment. Now, hypopigmentation, on the other hand, I know I have some of these dyschromias on my arms from just years of sun exposure. And dyschromia means, dysfunctional chromia or dysfunctional color. So some of the spots are brown, like in solar lentigo, brown spots, and some of them are white, hypopigmentation. But the sun can also cause damage. If you have a lot of excessive sun exposure, especially in fair folks, as the years go by, the ultraviolet radiation actually damages the DNA portion of the melanocyte and can reprogram it in a sense and either make that little melanocyte more hyper, so it's producing too much color, which in that case we can treat, right? We can treat with fading creams, lightening creams, brightening creams, all of those ingredients that we know as melanogenesis inhibitors that help to slow down the melanogenesis process and bring that dark area back to normal again. But if you have excessive damage from anything, it could be just damage to the skin, physical damage to the skin. It could be ultraviolet radiation damage to the skin. If it damages the melanocyte so severely that the melanocyte can no longer produce color, then you start to develop white spots in those areas. So, we'll call that hypopigmentation. In a lot of my clients, and even in myself, I noticed just looking at my arms, I have some solar lentigo, some brown spots, and also some white spots. Now, the solar lentigo, again, can be treated with a brightener and, of course, using a really good, strong sunblock to prevent it from getting worse, that is, or products that contain DNA repair enzymes. But the hypopigmentation is not so easily treated. I know some estheticians that are also permanent makeup artists and they do the microdermal pigmentation can tattoo over the area. But sometimes that gets kind of weird because as the weather changes and as the season changes and your skin color changes in general, that can look a little unnatural. So it is harder to treat hypopigmentation. A lot of the makeup artists will use, of course, makeup, right? A camouflage makeup over it just to disguise it. But definitely making sure if your client has either of these chromias, hyper or hypo, wearing a stronger sunblock, preferably a physical sunblock if they're not allergic, is essential.
Yeah, such a good point. And I'm glad you brought up the arms, Michelle. I think when I look at my own skin, this is the area where I actually see the most sun damage. And I'm no longer somebody who sunbathes, but we can get a lot of incidental exposure on our arms and our forearms.
Yes,
and
definitely.
If you look at older folks, sometimes their forearms too, you'll see the dyschromia and hypopigmentation.
Exactly, especially in the older folks, right? Because of just years and years of sun exposure, especially in folks who are Fitzpatrick 1 or Fitzpatrick 2 that don't have that additional protection. You're going to see a lot more of those types of spots on the skin.
Yeah, What I do is I leave a big, actually professional size of SPF by my door because I usually, you know, apply SPF on my face in the morning after I do my routine. But that bottle is my little reminder before I go out for a walk to reapply and make sure I'm covering my arms as well.
And you're so fair, Tess, you need to take yes. extra special care of your skin. Now, are you a Fitzpatrick 1.5 or a 2?
Yeah, exactly. I'd say 1.5. Okay. I'm fair. And I just had my skin checked. I did my yearly check with my derm and I'm all good. But she too pointed out the forearms and said, you know, you're going to want to be extra careful this summer.
Yes. And for men, especially older folks who, you know, maybe don't take care of their skin quite as well. Hopefully they are. Yeah. That yes. maybe don't have too much hair on the head or they're not protecting the backs of the ears or the backs of the head and they're fair. You really need to talk to those clients. You know, make sure those yes. women and men, they use that extra sunblock on the back of the neck, the head, if need be, the backs of the ears. Because that can happen. And the solar lentigo, in some cases, not many, but some cases, 10% of the cases can become solar keratosis. That's not a cancer, but it's a dysplastic state, right? The cells are starting to become a little abnormal. And yes. again, in some of those cases, not many, but some can go on to become a basal cell. Very, very yeah. rare, but there's a potential. Yes.
Yeah. My dad has had a cancer removed from his nose and, you know, he's okay. But I think also that generation, especially of men, doesn't hear the sunscreen message very often.
Exactly.
And they're not wearing it day to day. And we get a lot of sun on, yeah, our head, especially if it's hairless, or our nose and our face. And yeah, it's not uncommon to need surgery to remove it on your face. But
And it can become, you know, even basal cell carcinoma, which generally doesn't metastasize most of the time, it can still spread out. It can still take up a large area and then needs to be removed. And that could create a pretty big lesion on yes. the facial area or wherever it's needed. So yeah, those things. And of course, you know, if you have a client that is prone to this, they're going hopefully to the dermatologist once a year, or a couple of times a year to have a full body check from head to toe. Yeah.
Which is not as scary as I thought. You know, I had my first one recently, which was, yeah, a little bit late, but better late than never. But it's not scary. It takes all of 5 minutes. You know, you do undress, but the derm just checks you out. They've seen a million naked people and, you know, yes. you're on your way and at least you have peace of mind.
Right. And in most cancers, like the basal and the squamous, will affect where the sun does shine. But then there's melanoma, which can affect where the sun doesn't shine. So, you know, part of the reason why checking the bottoms of the feet, the buttocks, you know, just places where the sun doesn't shine is always important too, especially for your clients to do that as sort of a routine, you know, maybe every few months or so, since sometimes we can't see their entire body.
Yes. Yes. Well, this is such great information, Michelle, and I know I could talk to you all day. But I want to, yes, and we will. We need to get lunch very soon here. But I want to be considerate of your time and say thank you so, so much for joining us. I feel this message is so important and so empowering for estheticians because I know all of you out there want to care for all of your clients, especially those with additional needs or autoimmune conditions. So I think this is just such a helpful message, Michelle. So thank you so, so much for joining us.
Yes, and thank you for having me. You know where to reach me. I'm at Concepts Institute. You know, if anyone does have any questions, and it's always great to be here with you, Tess, and to provide, you know, knowledge and information to all your listeners. So, so happy to do it.
I know you are. So thank you so much for that. And I hope this message was impactful. I think at the end of the day, estheticians have such a healing power and even just inner touch to affect people who might feel a little bit like an outcast in normal society in terms of, you know, our abilities. We are a little bit limited. So having somebody who welcomes us into their treatment room to relax and have our skin worked on and healed. I think that's just so, so invaluable, not to mention what we can impart through our education and topical recommendations.
Yes, I agree. Estheticians are great healers. They have wonderful healing powers, and not just through their listening skills and their touch, but also their educational capabilities. So very, you know, very multifaceted there.
Yeah. And please be sure to check out Michelle's Concepts Institute website and her class list. I know she does offer in-person training, but also virtual for those of you who are far away from the Bay Area. And the virtual trainings are great. I did my lymphatic drainage course with Michelle virtually, but when I look back on the class, I almost feel like I was in person because it was so helpful and I was able to work on somebody while I watched the class.
And you always have access to the demonstration video, no matter what class it is. So you could always go back in the future, even years to come, and go back to the demonstration part of that and pop it up. And, you know, that is always, you know, a good guide.
Right. That's hugely valuable. You know, you pay for the class once, but you have it forever. So that's amazing. Anything else, Michelle, that you'd like to announce or tell people as far as, you know, what you offer and where they can find you?
Yeah, so I can be found at a Concepts Institute. And, you know, I have a variety of classes, everything from anti-aging, you know, microcurrent, machines, peels, rosacea, which is part of the acne class, and sort of everything in between. The classes have now gone back live in studio. You can also take them on Zoom. When you take them on Zoom, they're usually one full day. And you do have the recording, the Zoom recording, for a couple of days afterwards, but you have the demo part forever. And for people who are not able to get in the class on Mondays, because I know everyone has gone back to work, which is a great thing, you also have the option to rent the classes as four-day rentals. Same exact class, same exact thing. You could always email questions in and we send you your test at the end. And that is definitely an option for you as well. But like this Friday, tomorrow, I'm doing a peels class, an in-studio peels class. So looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to hearing from anybody, everybody, actually. If you have any questions for me, always happy to answer them.
Oh, that's very, very generous. And you guys, I hope you're listening and take Michelle up on her offer, because yeah, she's been so impactful to me and she extends that knowledge to everybody. So I think once you meet Michelle and take one of her classes, you will feel that connection as well. And we're so lucky to have you, Michelle. So thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And this has been really, really interesting.
Yes, thank you. And great to be here, and hope we can continue on our conversation with everyone on skin disorders another time as well.
Yep, absolutely. So we'll have to do a couple more episodes here.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks, Michelle. This was fun.
Thanks.
And I will look forward to talking to you guys in the next episode next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.